Hello and welcome to another episode of Living with Dying, the podcast where we try to encourage people to talk about death and dying because so often it's brushed under the carpet, one of life's taboos. Today I've come to a group called Oasis, which is based in Flackwell Heath, a village near High Wycombe, which I gather has been here for 25 years, and you were one of the founders. So I'm talking to Richard Chalmers. Would you like to tell me how it began?
Yes. In 97, I lost a really close relative of mine. And I tried to find out where I could get bereavement help from. And I couldn't find anywhere. I struggled for about 6 months to a year. And then a friend of mine said, you need to go and talk to the church. You really do. So I plucked up the courage, rang my local vicar. And he said, come round and we'll have a cup of tea. And since then, I haven't looked back. They looked after me for about 2 years. And then there was a lovely curate started at Christchurch in Flackwell Heath. And her name was Denise Critchell. She had a vision that God was calling her to do bereavement ministry. So she trained a lot of us, about 15 to 20 of us. And I was one of those. Because I couldn't praise the church enough for what they did for me. Because I was totally and utterly lost. So Chris Bull, the vicar at the time, and the curate Denise Critchell started this group called Oasis, and I was working full time, so I couldn't always get to the afternoon group, and it was only going to be for people locally in the village that we had done funerals for, and maybe surrounding areas a little bit, and because in churches you've all got your own boundary. So the group ran for 5 years and it was so popular. We didn't realise how many people were looking for bereavement care. And just somebody to mix, see them crying and seeing them laughing again, having a cup of tea, a nice piece of cake, an activity. And it grew and grew and grew. It was just a lovely group. I would dip in and dip out. As a chef, trained chef, I used to go in and do cooking for one, because when you're used to cooking for two, it's hard to cook for one. So that's how the group basically started way back in the early days.
Can I ask you to be a bit more personal? You say you had a loss and they helped you hugely. What was the help they gave you? How did it affect you? How did it help?
As you can see, I'm not English. I'm Scottish myself. I moved down to High Wycombe when I was 21, Flackwell Heath to be precise. I met my wife. I married my wife in the Church of England, which was a big thing for me because being Scottish and brought up in the Scottish church, as a Protestant, I got married in a Christian church in England, got to know my father-in-law, my mother-in-law, and really, really loved my father-in-law because he was one of those amazing men. He was just amazing. And it was really sad when he became ill. He didn't tell us for 2 years that he was ill, but I used to take him to hospital's appointments, doctor's appointments, so I got to know him really, really well. And being married to his best daughter, of course, his only daughter, we got on really well. And then all of a sudden, 6 months ready before he died, he actually told us he was dying. So my wife then fell pregnant with our son, which was his second grandchild. And it devastated me and my wife for a long time. I even get choked talking about it.
You too.
So that's why I looked for care. I had to be strong for my wife and my family. And there was no bereavement care there, none whatsoever. And I looked everywhere. I looked at all the big organisations, local organisations. There was nothing. And that's why a really close friend says to me, go to the church. They will help you. They will listen. They can't help you. They will point you in the right direction.
So what was the help that you got then? Was it just the listening? Is that what
it was mostly the listening and the being involved. Denise and Chris were so lovely to me. And they encouraged me to get involved and listen. And after I'd walked that path with them for such a long time, but it was just the welcome and the loving and the understanding that I got from them and the happiness, really, that I was being welcomed. And then when my wife gave birth to my son, Philip, it was like new life for me. And we were welcomed so much into this church. It was just so moving. And people don't understand it because you have to be there to know how sad it is to lose somebody you really love. My son and daughter, we've had a daughter since, they never knew the granddad. But if they would have, they would have just loved what I loved about him. He was just so honest. He was funny. He was so caring. He was so compassionate about his family. And he was so involved in his own church, the church that we got married in, which was, I think, God calling me to do this ministry that he had started years ago. But he used to go to church, sing, and I thought, it's got to be something more into Christianity, God. I didn't know what it was, so I started my whole journey again, because when you're a child, it's different in Scotland. So I started my journey again after I lost Jim. And I'm a seat at this church, and I've done it since.
So to sum up, you seem to be saying you found people who would listen to you, but also enabled you to feel part of a group.
Yeah, and a caring, loving group. It wasn't just the vicars that looked after you. It was the congregation. And being a part of a church and a congregation, a group, made you feel cared for, looked after. And it was really lovely. That group away back in them days is exactly as if the group starts today. It's exactly the same.
And I've heard that so often from people, that they are looking for someone who understands what they're going through. It's all very well talking about your grief with somebody, anybody, but people who don't understand, who haven't been through it themselves, can't give you that same level of compassion and understanding, really, can they?
That is true, definitely.
And can you tell me a bit about this training that you got?
Okay. As Denise wanted us all to be full of love, full of compassion, happiness, and non-judgmental. Because everybody's grief journey is totally different. And she trained us. Every week we used to go to her house, about 20 of us, and she would do a different training with us. She'd get different organisations in to train us, listening groups, doctors, NHS people, people from the Church of England. She would do the history of Christianity, looking after the bereaved. She did everything. She wanted us to be the best that she could possibly train us to be. And that passion is still there, like 25 years later. I can still see her in her dining room training us. It was just amazing what she did for us. And we continue doing that to this day. So we have lots of leaders here within the church, and they will do like a listening course. They will do chat nights. They will do meet and greet. We are really well looked after in the training side.
And so if somebody's bereaved in this community, this quite wide community, do they have to be part of the church to phone you up?
100% no. We're non-denominational when it comes to bereavement. We're non-religious. We're just compassionate about the person who's needing a little bit of love and care. And that's what we pride ourselves in, because we just want to bring those people in and see what we do with other people. Just feel loved and compassionate and give them that space to talk. When someone calls the office here or gets in contact with us through the web, within an hour or so, but like you found when you rung me, within an hour or so, we will give them a call, have a chat to them on the phone, maybe meet them for a coffee, explain what the two groups, Oasis, are, the daytime group, the evening group. We'll explain on the phone, have a chat to them over a coffee, invite them here to our coffee shop every day, and then we see what the right thing is for them. And if they just need a little bit of bereavement listening before they come to us, we will meet them for 4 or 5 or 6 weeks and then invite them to the group. We never ask them who they've lost. We let them tell us, because I think that is so important, that we don't ask questions. We let them tell us. And some people come straight to the group straight away, and we don't ask them who they've lost. We just welcome them. They sit with whoever they want, and there's tea and coffee. They get involved in everything that we do, but we don't ask questions. We wait for them to tell us, because it's so important. That's
really interesting. And some people wouldn't be able to come straight in and go to a group, would they? Because
no,
that would feel too hard.
That's why we say you get, when you've been doing this work that I've done for such a long time, you get to know the people that would like to see you for coffee beforehand, or just go through a bereavement listening of 6 or 10 or 12 weeks, which is so important. A lot of people will just do the 4 weeks or 6 weeks, and then now they're ready to come to the group. We explain what each group does, which is really important, and then they can choose. They can come to both groups if they wish. We do also other things with them. We do boat trips, we do holidays, we do so many different things. We do it at their speed. And if they want to join in, they can join in.
We'll get more onto the groups in a minute, but I just want to go back to what you said about not asking questions. I think that's so important, because I think one of the really off-putting things about going back into public, if you like, after you've been bereaved, is the fact that you're going to have to explain. And you don't necessarily want to tell everybody everything. You don't necessarily want to tell anybody anything.
No.
So not to be asked questions, I can see how that would be really helpful.
Everyone tells me that. They say, why don't you ask me who I've lost? Because that's your business, it's not ours. If you want to tell me, that's our business between us. And it is so important that they're free to tell us what they want.
And do they?
They do. Some of them do tell us lots and lots of things. I can tell you a story of a lady who lost her son, but she couldn't tell any of the group. She'd been coming for over 5 years. And I was sitting on the beach one day on the holiday, because I had a day off on the holiday. My other leaders take over, so I have a day off. And this lady was walking along the beach and she shouted at me. And so we went for a cup of tea together. And she said, Richard, I've got to tell you something. Never told you before. She said, my son took his own life. Mm. And I said, how did that make you feel? She said, I wanted to tell you because you've never asked me. You've just loved me. You've cared for me. You've fed me. You've gave me a glass of wine when I wanted it. You've gave me a cup of tea when I've wanted it. And I just feel I have to tell you now. And I was so touched that day that she chose me to tell. I mean, we have lots of leaders at the afternoon group and an evening group, but she chose to tell me. And that was a real special moment for me and her. And she changed after that day. She blossomed. She was always a lady that was very quiet and very gentle. But after that day, she blossomed. And everybody said, what did you do? I said, she told me her story. And I always say, everybody's got a story. And that story is so important.
And I think it's precious, isn't it? I think that's possibly why we hang on to it sometimes, because it feels so precious to us. We're not sure if we want to kind of open it up to anybody else.
Definitely. And I think the right time and the right place and the right person is here. And that's what all my leaders that help me at the evening group. And I know the daytime feel exactly the same. People are always there at the right time, at the right place, and it's lovely. So.
But it is that business about it being so personal and so important, isn't it?
It definitely is. And I think the hardest thing for a person to do is step out of their comfort zone, walk through the door. There was a lady who I knew for many years. Her husband died very suddenly, and I invited her to the group Oasis. And the first time she came, she drove in the car park and drove out.
I can understand that.
So I rung her the next day and I said, what happened to you last night? You didn't come. She said, I did come. I drove in and drove out. I said, I couldn't get out of the car. I said, right, next month, when you come, I'll be waiting for you. Well, I saw a car drive in and then somebody sidetracked me. She drove out again.
Oh.
I've missed it again. So the third week, I rung her again and I said, I missed you last night. I saw you come in and drive out, but I got sidetracked, didn't get out to meet you at the car park. I said, please come again next month. She said, I promise you I will, and I'll try harder to come out of the car. She said, but I'm really nervous. So there's no need to be nervous. If you come into that room, you will know at least 10 to 15 people in that room. You're a community lady, and you will just know somebody. Oh, I don't think I will know anyone. So the next month came, her car door opened, her leg came out. I shot out straight away as the car door was ready to shut, ready for her to drive away. I invited her in, took her by the arm. We walked in together. As soon as she walked in, she went, hello, hello, hello. She knew so many people in the room. She never looked back from that day. And she spent 15 years with us, which was, to me, was the biggest thing. There was a lovely gentleman comes to our afternoon group. And he lost his wife, and his wife, before she died, she says to him, I'll give you one bit of advice. If anybody invites you anywhere, go. Because if you say no, they'll never invite you again. So his neighbour was going off to afternoon Oasis. And she said, would you like to come? He went, oh, no, it's not for me. And he thought, oh, I forgot what she told me. And he said, anyway, it passed. 2 weeks passed. And he said, I avoided her for the next time. He said, so another 2 weeks passed and she met me again in the drive. I'm going tomorrow. I'll stop and ask you if you want to come. And he thought, I'll go. So she invited him. He came, hung his jacket up, he said, and he opened the door. He said, and there was about 50 women in there and one man.
Ooh.
He looked up to the sky and said, don't laugh, I'm here. So he went and sat next to this chap. And, you know, that man comes to both groups now and he's our biggest advocate for Oasis. He just tells everybody and everyone about us. And he tells his story. That is a part of his story. And we have recorded that story. And he is just absolutely an amazing man. I just love the way he said he took the advice from his wife and didn't do it. And then the day he came, and he tells the story a lot better than I, but it was just amazing.
I've heard different versions of that, this business about saying accepting every invitation, and I have to confess I didn't to start with because there were things I really didn't want to do. But another good bit of advice is accept every invitation, but go under your own means. Drive if you can, and then you've always got an escape route.
Yeah,
I 100%
agree with that totally. Yeah, definitely.
So let's come on to the groups now. You've got two different groups, and how do they run? And
we have two groups. Our first one started in 2000. It was launched by the lovely Fiona Castle. She launched our afternoon Oasis, which meets at 2:30 to 4, the first and third Wednesday afternoons of every month. And they have some sort of activity. They always have tea and cake, because we always pride ourselves. You always get something to eat. Where there's Oasis involved, you get food and drink. There's an activity, or we have a local guest speaker. There's a quiz. There's always something to do. And if you want to join in, you can. Or if you feel you want to talk to somebody about something private or just something that's not normal, let's say, there's always somebody there that can take you somewhere and they can sit and chat. Our evening group meets on the second Wednesday evening, 7 to 9. We have a two-course meal, a glass of wine if you want it, soft drinks, tea and coffee. And we have, yet again, guest speakers. We have an activity. We have singing. There's all sorts of stuff going on. I mean, we've had the most amazing guest speakers. We had the lovely Debbie McGee, who came to talk to us one night about her life with Paul, pre's death. And then we had the Queen's Padre. We have had so many. We had the Buckinghamshire Chair of Council at our last meeting. We just do different things because people have got different things that they enjoy. So we invite different people. And 99% of people will always come and do it for us because they think, well, that's a good bit. But we are really excited this year. It's our 25th year. And we're launching a new group, which will be on the fourth Wednesday evening of the month, which will be for people working age from 18 to 67. Only because we're finding people are dying younger and there's no specific bereavement care around for those in that age group. And we want people to come and feel that we can look after them, walk that journey with them. So, because both the groups at the moment are a little bit maturer groups. The daytime is mostly mature people because they like coming out during the day. Don't feel safe at night. The evening group, our youngest is 55 and our eldest is 97. So it's a massive age group. But we just feel that we want to comfort those that are a little bit in the working environment.
So sad, isn't it, that people are dying younger and it means children are being left without parents.
And it's not just children left without parents, it's parents losing children. Mm. We look after a wide range of people. It's not always old, not always people that have died of illnesses. It's people that have died on accidents. And now children are driving a lot younger and the cars are more faster. So that's another way of losing someone. But yeah, we're just there to support people because we all need it when we need that little bit of love. And when people come to us and they tell us how much they feel loved, that gives me a skip and a step. After I've done an 8 hour at work and I've come and did 8 hours at Oasis in the evening, and all my leaders, most of them are working people. So die, and they're all volunteers, not myself.
So you're putting an awful lot of effort into it, aren't you? And you're kind of telling me already the reward you get back.
It is the love that we get from people. You just want to do your best for them. I mean, we do some crazy things. So we take them on holiday. We put shows on for them. And I mean, it's not just the little guy that from the local pub that will come and sing for us. It's like we've got our 25th anniversary this year. We've got the local singer, Andy Bourne, who was one of the runner-ups on X Factor and Starbust. He was a winner on the TV. So he wants to come and support us because he believes in the work that we do. And there's people like Debbie will come and do things for us. We had the Jersey guys come and sing for us and perform for us. Our poor vicar, I think sometimes he thinks, what is he up to now? We decorate our church and we let it become a stage, a theatre for the evening. It's just people need to feel that the church isn't just there for good times, bad times and sad times. We're here to support our local community, and that's what I think we do. And we're non-judgmental, which is great. So anyone from any religion can come. It doesn't matter.
Does that happen?
It does. We have all different nationalities come. We used to only have I call them a little hard group of core of men. There's only three. And now we've got nine this year. Why we've got nine, we do not know. But we've got nine people and gentlemen, and they all stick together. Because most of them, it's ladies at both groups. But the group keeps growing and growing and growing. Some people will stay with us for a long time. And then people will just dip in and out. So some people will just come for a year. And then they've had that. That's them. They're happy. They're back on an evil keel. And we always say, if you need to talk to us, let us know. So,
but some people stick around much longer, do they?
Definitely. They feel safe. And if they've got a problem, they will ring us up and say, Richard, how can I fix this? Can you get somebody to do something for me? Because they trust us. We trust our advice. And we wouldn't give any bad advice to them. We go away and research it ourselves, make sure what we're saying is right. So
can you give me the benefit of all your 25 years of experience, and this is a question I ask lots of people, but what are the things you recommend people do say and don't say to the recently bereaved, and what in what ways do you suggest they can help?
People will cross the road to ignore you, not deliberately, but they don't want to upset a person who's bereaved. And I was in the same conversation with my wife the other night. She said, I don't know what to say to people when they bereaved. I just ask them how things are. Don't say, oh, how are you? Because people just go, I'm fine. But really, they're not fine. I said, just give them that smile and say, would you like a coffee? I'd love to join you for a coffee. And then it gives them the opportunity to talk. And if they don't want to talk about it, it's fine. But I just feel sad when people cross the road or people just give them a wave. But I just think listening to somebody who's been bereaved, I'm speaking to a lovely lady at the moment who lost her son, and she smiled at me the other night when she came to see me. I said, oh, you're smiling. She said, Richard, you give me hope. And I went, thank you for that. She said, no, you listen, you smile. We laugh together. She said, I never thought I'd laugh again after I've lost my son. And after she'd gone, I washed the two cups up and I went to the toilet, washed my hands, and I looked in the mirror and I actually smiled at myself because mm-hmm. she made me smile. Because people give you so much back. They really do. But we're there to support you. If you're worried about anything, let us know. And we'll help if we can. And then know that. I just love how they come and trust us, but it takes them a little while to trust us. And I wouldn't trust you on the first day, but within a couple of years, they're telling you some really personal and intimate things, where they need help and how they're missing their partners. Because the older generation, pick myself up, dust myself off, but you can see they're still unhappy and sad inside.
I can see exactly why you're successful, because apart from your enthusiasm, you're providing a place where people can find other people who understand.
Yeah.
And people like you as well, on top of that, who can be a good listening ear. And I think that's one of the key things about people who've been bereaved, is they don't feel lonely.
Yeah, and there is a lot of loneliness out there. And it is being brave enough to take that first step. And when they take the first step, they went, I didn't know this happened in my village. But we've been doing this for 25 years. Come and find us. And people say, how is it costed? How do you get your funds? And it's donations only. We don't get any money from any outside organisation. Nobody ever gives us money. It's just donations.
Well, it's a wonderful enterprise. Thank you so much, Richard, for telling me all about it.
It is a pure pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.